Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this Friday, the 9th day of June. Merry Arrestmas, and a happy new arraignment to all. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the Merry Wacky Zany real-time madcap multimedia extravaganza. It is The Horn chat room during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m., Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the Great Globe Round, and whatever time it happens to be when you're listening to the podcast. But if you're listening live, well, run on by the aforementioned Merry Wacky Zany, and if you never have before, pick out a screen name and a password, and you'll be greeted by the early arrivers. That would be Anatole and Irish Dave and Ralphs and Squeaky and Theo, all of whom are just itching to meet you if you've never been there before. It's a wonderful little community that we have going on here at The Horn. And so, yeah, I love that, Irish Dave. So, what's new? Anything going on? Hey, is anything going on? I mean, it's been a long week, and bullshit, did I miss any? No, I'm kidding. I know what's going on. Hi, I'm Robin, and I have a feeling this one might turn out to be, if we can get the technical glitches managed, a Friday on the Front Porch for the Ages. Now, Roger is away, and Brother Bishop Steve, all-around great guy from Georgistan, is unable to be here. And so I don't exactly know how to start the front porch conversation. So we'll see what happens here in about, 56 minutes or so. But there is a link at headon.live if you've never been in before. It'll carry you over the river and through the woods to the old holler tree we sublet from the Keebler Elves, wherein we keep the extraordinary, ordinary round table around which we gather each and every Friday to discuss whatever news of the week grabs our fancy. And new voices are always welcome. Absolutely. And so I hope maybe some new folks will come by. It would be wonderful if that was the case. But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so, consequently, we say thanks to our ninth day of the month subscribers. Thank you so very much for helping to keep this program on the air. Thank you to Mary Bell, and thank you to Khalil. Thank you to James. Thank you to Ralphs. Thanks as well to David up in Oregon, having, I think, finished his first full year of law school. Thank you an anonymous friend. Let's see here. Make sure I'm not missing anybody. And thanks to Joseph. Joseph, thank you very much for jumping in. So the fundraising goal for the evening stands at $1,450. $1,450 to finish the week. So that means Friday's unfunded, Thursday's unfunded, funded, Wednesday's unfunded, and $250 if Tuesday is unfunded. Well, no, Wednesday doesn't count. So that means Tuesday's unfunded and part of last Friday. is unfunded. Thank you, though. Thanks to all of our subscribers. If you'd like to be a subscriber, it's real easy. The PayPal interface is right there on the main page at headon.live, and all you got to do is click the box that says make this a recurring monthly donation or something like that. If you'd like to be a subscriber via Patreon, well, that's under the Contribute tab, and we're always looking for new subscribers. We always need new subscribers because maintaining this little radio network in thoroughly non-capitalist fashion, not selling anything, giving everything away, is not easy. But we'll see how things turn out. I've been looking forward to this all day long. I got up this morning. Has the world gone mad? There was a flavor of that to the day. I had an early note from Brother Bishop Steve in Georgistan, all-around great guy. All Steve said was, poor Pedro got the short straw this morning. Yeah. That poor man, I don't know how, when considering the calls that Pedro puts up with, I don't know how he isn't just wasted out of his mind by the end of lunch. Or even bothers eating food. That poor man. And according to all-around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve, the maggots were out in force, and boy, were they mad. Because, of course, they were. Now, Lee in New York says, we need a chant for the 2024 presidential campaign. My obvious suggestion from 8 years ago, lock him up. Lock him up, lock him up, lock him up. It's elegant, it's concise, it's accurate, and it contains no small amount of schadenfreude and irony. So I'd say that that's probably a great chant. Wouldn't you? Of course, the coverage that I've seen and heard all day long, this is a historic moment in America. Never before has a president been... Well, never before have we had a walking, talking criminal enterprise occupy the White House for 4 years. So that might explain the never before part. But God, what a crook. And of course, the indictment was unsealed today. So whatever it is that Nitwit Nero is barking and grunting and braying and bleating about, that's B-L-E-A-T-I-N-G, in case anyone's wondering. Yeah. Bleating. We know that it's based on, well, lies. And bleating he has been, and so have his followers. Stephen Miller, the little Nazi, has been hollering into the Twitter void. Lots of other people have, too. We'll get to all of that. But I guess the best place to start in terms of this discussion is to talk about the indictment itself. And it's a whopper, y'all. 38 counts of mishandling classified documents. A statute whose enhanced criminal penalties Nitwit Nero signed into law because he desperately wanted to weaponize the Justice Department to use them against Hillary.
Lock her up, lock her up. Lock her up, lock her up, lock her up.
And so the boys down at Crazy Dave's Self-Crucifixion Emporium are probably working triple time at this point, getting the pogo, just keeping pogo sticks ready for Nitwit Nero. And so much of this is a reflection of things that we have said here for years, probably chief among which is that he is a defense lawyer's worst nightmare. The client who won't shut up. Annette and I were laughing earlier today because I used the former client's name. She knows who I was talking about. So, Nitwit Nero is him on steroids. This was a will contest. You may recall the story. We woodshedded the young man the night before his hearing. It was a lead pipe cinch. His dad had left an estate of some several millions of dollars. And we walked, my partner and I, we walked our client carefully through the process of testifying in front of a judge. And he seemed to get it. And then at the end, he said, you know, I just need y'all to know it's not about the money, at which point I looked at him and said, oh, it very much is. I haven't driven all the way down here for my health. It's about the money. It's not about the money. I'm going home. I understood what he was getting at. He was talking about how much he loved his daddy and everything, and he didn't want to seem to be greedy or anything. That would have, no. But I said, what's more important is I don't ever want to hear you say that phrase again. And so, of course, the minute we got into court and I closed my presentation and my examination of my client, the judge said, anything else you'd like to say, young man? And he said, well, Judge, it's not about the money. I mean, it's not about the money. And it was like St. Peter denying Christ three times before the cock crowed. Because one more time he said, I mean, I love my daddy a lot, but it's, and so it's not about the money. Bad clients are a lawyer's worst freaking nightmare. And Nitwit Nero is so much worse than that. Darlene in Connecticut says, remember when I said a long time ago that the Fed should check Bedminster and that Trump probably buried top secret documents with Ivana in her grave on the Bedminster golf course? Guess who said the same thing today? Mary Trump. I understand that because Ivana is buried on this private property, there's no legal recourse to force an exhumation either. I find that difficult to conceive, Darlene. I mean, federal law is, whether he owns it or not, if there's criminal conduct, well, if there's some evidence to support a search warrant, I don't think it's quite the impossibility that, but then again, there would have to be some sort of credible evidence to lead to an affidavit, you know, a sworn affidavit toward that end. But who knows what's in there? Or what was in there and is now in Saudi hands. Billable Rick adding, but Robin, it may not be about the money, but it is about the cat. No, Billable Rick, it is not about the cat. Oh, dear God, that was a Friday. It's not about the cat. For new listeners to the horn, that is an old inside joke. But what an inside joke it was. It's not about the cat, Rick. Steve in New York. Trump charges. Smith did not charge him with possession only. The statute he charged him under was possession with intent to disseminate. I know. Big deal. Very big deal. And possession with intent to disseminate because, in fact, he did disseminate. One of the things to be noted out of this indictment is that it is another of those talking or speaking indictments. In other words, instead of listing the bare-bones allegations to meet the elemental criteria of the crimes charged, no, this lays out a narrative. you can hear the Law and Order sound effect in the background, you know, dum dum. He hoarded materials that had the highest degree of sensitivity, all after he was out of the White House. And if you want something that'll kind of give you, not kind of, they'll give you a chills, or the case of the turtle squirts, he secreted and purloined documents about the U.S. nuclear programs, about potential soft spots that the U.S. and our allies may have militarily. He hoarded information about plans for how the U.S. might retaliate in case of an attack. And we're talking about things that are 2 years gone now. The ashes of the burnt down barn are no longer even extant. There's not even a blackened wood screw or nail left. So the only safe assumption is that whatever Trump had, somebody else has too.
China.
Or, of course, Mother Muscovy. North Korea. Pakistan. And it appears that he also gave up information that we had received from our Five Eyes intelligence allies. You remember when Nitwit Nero shared classified information from our partner in peace, Israel, with Sergei Kislyak and some other Putin stooge? And just as we expected, the prosecutors gave evidence to the grand jury about Nitwit Nero sharing a U.S. plan of attack against Iran. There, the meeting was held there at Bed Monster in New Jersey in July of 2021. And that's the recorded meeting where he tells the people in attendance,
read it, read this thing, it's wild. Now understand, it's secret and it's not declassified.
Those things are called admissions in criminal court. And then a couple of months later, August, September maybe, he shared a military map with top secret plastered all over it with a staffer at his PAC. And along the way, he told the staffer that,
I shouldn't be showing you this. It's classified. Don't get too close.
And he does this for a variety of reasons, among other things, the enhancement of his sense of personal prestige. But more importantly is what it shows about Nitwit Nero's state of mind, that he damned well knew what he was doing was illegal and did it anyway. And there was no real security for any of the documents. I mean, this little studio has a lot of cardboard boxes in it and a lot of papers. None of them are classified. But an argument can be made that we have taken more care of documents here than he did down there at Mar-a-Lago. People who didn't even have security clearances were exposed to the documents. And then there's his valet, who was also indicted. Walt Nauta. Nauta, Nautai, Nautai, Nautarum. Latin, first declension, feminine gender. Sailor. Nauta means sailor. Walt Nauta was his valet. No word on whether he also had anything to do with Nitwit Nero's new look, his new hairstyle, courtesy of the 1980s called, and they want their flock of seagulls hairstyle back. No, really. Look at the Joy in Ann Arbor pointed this out to me. His hairstyle is straight out of.
And I ran so far away.
Randy Radar pointing out, propaganda is stronger than facts. Poor Pedro. For example, some friend has more ripe bananas than he or she can eat, so you might suggest putting them in the refrigerator, and you know that the skins will discolor, but the insides will last longer. So you show your friend that this is the case, but your friend refuses to believe you because decades of Chiquita commercials have told them that you do not put bananas in the refrigerator, sort of like that. That's a great example, Randy Radar. Flavio says, anyone who read Spy magazine in the 1980s and 90s, and I did, knew exactly who Donald Trump was. It's too bad they ceased publication in 1998. I wish it was still around. The writing was awesome. Oh, it was. And then it sort of reminded me of all the years in which Esquire magazine would post a picture of Richard Milhouse Pinhead Nixon, his mouth agape and laughing, and the headline would always be, "Why is this man laughing?" Yeah, Spy for what's the date on this one? I don't see it. But Spy, wow, little Donald unhappy at last. Trump's final days, page 50. Only it wasn't. Steve in New York says, there's a two-word Latin phrase for what's up with Trump. He's fucked, F-U-C-T. Well, I mean, sure, seems maybe. And, of course, the pressure is on Walt Nauta to roll on him. Rolling, 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 keep them witnesses rolling. Nero, off the cuff. Yeah. We'll workshop that. But Walt Nauta is under a lot more pressure than Nitwit Nero is, because Nitwit Nero, he knows, will leave him flapping in the breeze under the bus. This is an amazing... And granted, all the grand jury had to do was find that it was more likely than not that a crime was committed, or crimes, 38 counts, and that it was more likely than not that Donald Trump and Walt Nauta were the people who committed the crimes. They did that. That's why we have an indictment. But the evidence presented was, to say the least, damning. At one point in time, December 2021, Walt Nauta, Walt the Sailor, walked into a room and found out that a whole bunch of boxes had toppled over, and what was in the boxes had fallen out on the floor. One of the documents was marked secret, rel to USA, FVEY, Five Eyes, the Five Eyes Intelligence Alliance. It's the United States, the United Kingdom, three other countries. So then Walt Nauta jumped on the phone and texted another of poor souls who were desperate enough to work for Donald Trump, but no. He texted, "I opened the door and found this." And he sent two pictures of the dumped over boxes, including the picture of the classified information. And whoever the employee was texted back and said, "Oh no, oh no." And then texted, "I'm sorry, POTUS had my phone," meaning Nitwit Nero. Then there's the whole Evan Corcoran thing. I mean, this is quintessential obstruction of justice. This kind of makes Nixon and the plumbers look amateurish. It was late May 2022, according to the indictment, and Nitwit Nero had already been served the subpoena for the classified documents. And Nitwit Nero tried to make sure that his own lawyer, Evren Corcoran, didn't find out about his possession of those documents. After they got the subpoena in late May 2022, Evren Corcoran and another pettifogger, dumb enough to work for Trump, well, they went to their client and said, we need to search the rest of the property here at MAGA-LOCO for any of the other documents in the subpoena. And Trump, who once asked, what's the point in having nuclear weapons if you can't nuke somebody, or a hurricane or something, he said,
what happens if we just don't respond at all? Wouldn't it be better if we just told them we don't have anything here?
And Evren Corcoran kept notes of all of this because Evren Corcoran is a lawyer and documented all of this stuff.
I don't even know who Evren Corcoran is. I don't think I've ever met him.
And Evren Corcoran documented these things, thinking that it would be protected by attorney-client privilege, but, no. No, the notes wound up before the grand jury. Because a lawyer, under the rules, there are rules, this is not Vietnam. The rules say that a lawyer cannot be involved in his client's own criminal activity and maintain attorney-client privilege at the same time. And so the United States Court of Appeals said, nope, no attorney-client privilege here. You better turn over, you have to turn over your notes, Evren Corcoran. And Evren Corcoran turned over his notes. Because Evren Corcoran loves his law license more than he loves Donald Trump. So that's when Evren Corcoran told Nitwit Nero that he'd be back on the second day of June 2022. 1 week, or 1 year and 1 week ago, as of this broadcast, and said he would look in the storage room at MAGA-LOCO for more documents. That caused Nitwit Nero to tell Walt Nauta to take the boxes that had the classified documents out of anywhere that Corcoran wanted to look around. So on June 1, 2022, Nitwit Nero placed a phone call to his own lawyer and said,
hey, Evren, buddy. Yeah, you still coming? You still coming tomorrow? You are? I mean, there's really no need. But you're coming. There's a subpoena.
So on the morning of June 2nd, 2022, Nitwit Nero talked to Walt Nauta for 24 seconds. Must have been a phone call, and there must be a record of it, and apparently Jack Smith has that record. And a few hours later, there was Walt Nauta and another Nitwit Nero servant schlepping 64 boxes from the storage room over to Nitwit Nero's residence, and they returned only 30 boxes out of 64. Even so, Walt Nauta took Evren Corcoran down to the storage room, and Corcoran found 38 classified documents. At which point, Nitwit Nero, trying to appear innocent as a newborn baby rat, looked at Evren Corcoran and said,
did you find anything? Is it bad? Good?
And then he made, according to Corcoran's notes, he made a funny motion. When they were talking about whether Evan Corcoran should possess the 38 documents and take them back to his hotel rooms. He did it all by pantomime and gesture, but Evan Corcoran said he understood that he was, Nitwit Nero wanted him to purloin any stuff that was bad. So we still have the weekend and Monday, 4 days. 3 o'clock on Tuesday is when Julius Geezer is expected to arrive on the steps of the Miami Federal Courthouse for the Southern District of Florida. And that's another one of those little speed bump where stuff gets weird. Because when Nitwit Nero is arraigned, he will be arraigned by the very judge that he appointed the same judge who, with no legal basis whatsoever, tried to shut down the grand jury investigation in the first place. That seems curious. It's the best word I've got for it right now. The federal judge who completely ignored the law, ethics, everything. Aileen Cannon has been assigned to the Mar-a-Lago case, at least on an initial basis. It's not exactly certain as to why Aileen Cannon, who had a really impressive resume up until she decided to flush her legal reputation down the toilet, it's not for sure why she got the case, but she is the federal judge who signed off on the initial search warrant. She may only have it long enough to arraign him. Former federal prosecutor Joyce Vance on MSNBC was pretty helpful. She said, before everyone gets too spun up about reports Judge Cannon has been assigned to the Trump case, a little law. I used to be an appellate chief in the 11th Circuit where Florida is, and I litigated a few appeals where we asked the Court of Appeals to order a judge to recuse. Although a judge's behavior in court generally doesn't form the basis for recusal, the 11th Circuit has ordered reassignment where a judge leans so heavily for a defendant they call their objectivity in the eyes of the public into question. This is persuasive authority that Judge Cannon must step aside if the case falls to her as a permanent assignment. Her court, and certainly the 11th, won't tolerate the damage it would do to their credibility if she failed to voluntarily recuse. Of course, the other side of this coin and it may seem a bit Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm for me. The other side of this coin is that if Jack Smith tries Nitwit Nero in front of one of his hand-picked creatures, which Aileen Cannon is, and the jury convicts him, well now, that will speak volumes. To the evidence. And the quality of the prosecution. So it's all just terribly, terribly interesting and exciting. And I know there's a difference of opinion with me on this. Perhaps within the Horn Family Community Congregation. But I still think that there's a chance. You know, it's a puncher's chance. I still think there's a chance that at some point in time he says, "Heh.
I gotcha. I pardoned myself before I left office for any crime I had may have committed or might commit. So there, you're trumped."
I know it sounds crazier in the head than a hog is in the ass, but there are actual Supreme Court decisions that describe the pardon power of the President of the United States as, now bear in mind, this relates only to federal crimes. This is not state charges. So if Fonnie Willis, for instance, charges Nitwit Nero in Georgia, the President can't do anything about that. The same goes for Alvin Bragg's prosecution of him in New York. But as to these charges, well, again, the Supreme Court says that the pardon power of the President of the United States is, their word, not mine, unlimited. So while framers of the Constitution like George Mason was absolutely appalled at the pardon power language in the Constitution, and in fact, at the ratification convention in the Old Dominion, Virginia, George Mason actually argued against ratification based upon the existence of the pardon power, and said the pardon power should not be given to the President of the United States because he, George Mason, could imagine a time when a president would pardon himself for crimes in which he himself had been involved. It's almost like George Mason had an antique magic eight ball with a busted screen and a Ouija board and a crystal ball all sitting there. This orange blob appeared within the smoke and ether inside the crystal ball and morphed into the face. My God, what is that? And don't think for an instant that whoever winds up defending him in this case isn't thinking about that, assuming they've run across George Mason. Because no matter how crazy or out there this idea sounds, lawyers live for crazy and out there ideas. And in point of fact, this is not that crazy or out there. It just isn't. It's an argument to make. It's a table to pound. When you've got the facts, pound on the facts. When you've got the law, pound on the law. And when you've got the table, pound on the table. Sometimes the law, what the law doesn't say is as important as what it does.
There's nothing the Constitution says I can't pardon myself.
And you know what? If he said that, he would be correct. The pardon power of the presidency is not voluminously defined. This is the language. It comes from Article 2, Section 2, Clause 1. The president, and there's some intervening language that's not relevant. The president shall have the power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment. Did you hear anything in there that said the president can't pardon himself? And I'm not trying to catastrophize this, but to a certain extent, Nitwit Nero is out in front of the messaging on this. That's why he started bleating and braying and grunting about it before the federal government said a damned word. Historically, since we live in an era where a majority of the most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties on our Supreme Court hew closely to the idea of standing by what the framers of the Constitution intended via the jurisprudential fraud of originalism, well, there's Alexander Hamilton, who died way too late, who in Federalist number 74 said the pardon power was important and needed to be vested in the presidency. Wonder if old Al was thinking he might need a pardon somewhere down the road. Because he did wind up involved in some skeevy shit. The language used by George Mason at the Virginia Ratifying Convention said that the pardon power, well, he said, the president ought not to have the power of pardoning because he may frequently pardon crimes which were advised by himself, which is exactly what has happened here. There are crimes which Nitwit Nero advised himself for his own benefit, perhaps for his own monetary benefit. And again, I don't know what this does to our national security situation. You tell me later. Should we assume that everything is compromised and deal accordingly? I mean, this is the second time we've had to deal with something like that in the last year. Remember the hack by the guy, Air National Guard dude up in Massachusetts, and posted it in his Discord server to impress people? It's almost like we don't have any secrets anymore. Stephen, New York, points out, with regard to the Five Eyes countries, the implications of what we see here can possibly be devastating for the entire country. If Trump were to win again, no intelligence agency will share anything with us probably ever. And nor could they be blamed. And Steve continues and says, Merrick Garland, I was one of the few people who defended A.G. Garland. I think Garland played this perfectly, including not signing off on the indictment and allowing Mr. Smith to have complete control. And that is true. Merrick Garland was not a part of this process whatsoever. He named the special counsel and got as far away from it as he possibly could, built the Great Wall of Silence, the Cone of Silence, and that was the end of it. Which brings us to further the grunting and bleating and braying. The weaker speaker, the man of silly putty, Kevers McCarthy, tweeted earlier, "Today is indeed a dark day for the United States of America. It is unconscionable for a president to indict the leading candidate opposing him. Joe Biden kept classified documents for decades. I and every American who believes in the rule of law stand with President Trump." Hope you don't get any baby gravy on your chin, Kevers. "Stand with President Trump against this grave injustice. House Republicans will hold this brazen weaponization of power accountable." His initial premise was just stunningly unmitigated bullshit. Joe Biden did not indict Geezer Disgustus. Joe Biden was not neither in the same area code nor zip code and barely the same continent as the people who indicted Nitwit Nero. Nitwit Nero was indicted by a grand jury sworn to do their duties and honor their oath. And Joe Biden had not a damn thing to do with it, and Kevin McCarthy damned well knows it. What a sack of festering, rotten pig dung Kevers McCarthy is. Oh, thank you, Flavio. Now, Ta, while it declines, most nouns in the first declension are feminine. Nauta is a masculine noun with a feminine declension. Thanks for that. I see that A-A-E and, Agricola, Femina, Willa. Yeah. Imagine that, a feminine farmhouse. Flavio adds, "But the most persuasive argument against self-pardon, says Michigan State University law professor Brian Kalt, is that allowing them would violate the principle that no one can be the judge in their own case. Indeed, that was the formal legal opinion rendered by the Justice Department in 1974 during the Nixon presidency." True. Well aware of that. But when you're dealing with people on the Supreme Court who try to take in and internalize the thoughts of long since dead white men in wigs, doesn't count for much. In fact, that George Mason argument made to the Virginia Ratifying Convention, well, Virginia ratified the Constitution, making it arguably a rejection of his argument that the president should not be able to pardon himself. I would sincerely be surprised if he doesn't have a self-pardon tucked away somewhere. It would be hilarious if it was tucked away in one of the boxes that the National Archives has now. And thanks so much to Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan, all-around great guy. I think I got this. I'm tired of working. I should be able to kick off the porch. Please don't be irritated with me if something goes sideways. Are you kidding? I live sideways, Steve. I would not know how to be irritated with you if I were so inclined to even try. So don't you fret. Scary Jerry says, I don't normally meme, but this is amazing. A photograph from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Jack Nicholson looking sideways at Nitwit Nero. And it's captioned, you still think you're the president, don't you? Oh, yeah. That's a dandy, Scary Jerry. Thank you for that. Cowbell. But like I said, you got Kevers McCarthy out there publishing that bilious puddle of puke. And I know we all want to think it's absolutely impossible that a self-pardon could exist. And so, consequently, Jack in Shreveport says, self-pardon power. The president pardoning himself would go against the checks and balances of the structure of the government, and it would go against the principle of everyone being equal under the law. Also, pardoning a person for some offense that hasn't been charged or been convicted of yet wouldn't balance with the requirement that searches, seizures, and charges must be specific to the places, things, and people they apply to. One would think. But we are in the undiscovered country. We are in terra incognita. And lawyers, especially criminal defense lawyers, specialize in making novel arguments. And even the framers knew that this was a possibility. And yet they chose not to say that the president may not pardon himself. P.S., Jack adds, on the Mason pardon thing, just because George Mason said it doesn't mean it wasn't absurd and crazy. Well, George Mason was kind of a prick. No, let me rephrase that. George Mason was a prick. There's a reason that the most vicious right-wing law school in the country is located at George Mason University. Curiously, the name of that college school of law is the Antonin Scalia School of Law at George Mason University. And then there's representing Clay Higgins of Louisiana Stan, since Jack just wrote in from Shreveport. Clay Higgins. Well, we're back to where we were a couple of years ago. Y'all, they're gonna do it again. Clay Higgins tweeted the following strange statement. Last night, a little before 11. I don't want to be wrong. Hold on. Let's get the timestamp right. 9:19 p.m. June 8th. Okay? He tweeted the following.
President Trump said he has been summoned to appear at the federal courthouse in Miami on Tuesday at 3 p.m. This is a perimeter probe from the oppressors. Hold. Period. Little r, capital P, capital O, capital T, capital U.S., our POTUS has this. Buckle up. 150K, know your bridges. Rock steady calm. That is all. Now, you have to remember that Clay Higgins is a really butch little maggot. Before he went to Congress, he was some sort of law enforcement in Louisiana and was and had acquired a reputation for beating the hell out of people that he felt like needed the hell beaten out of them. And so people saw that tweet and went, "R. POTUS? Yeah, real POTUS." That's right. An oath-sworn member of the Congress of the United States referred to Donald Trump as real POTUS. That's maggot insurrection speak. Journalist Jake Sherman said, "I still have no idea what this means." Another journalist, Will Sommer, from the Washington Post, added, "Any ideas on what 150K know your bridges means besides literally knowing your local bridges? Not something I've encountered before. Will, you need to get out more." Because someone did know what it meant. Oh Lord, yes, someone knew. The someone who knew was Jeff Charlotte. His latest book is The Undertow, Scenes from a Slow Civil War. He covers right-wing fascists at great length in the book. And Jeff Charlotte said, "Deep scary. 150K refers to military-scale maps and publicly available U.S. Geological Survey maps of areas mostly surrounding military installations. This isn't a metaphor. This isn't slow civil war. This is a congressman calling for the real thing. I think this is scary as hell." It was just last month that Clay Higgins was caught arguably committing a battery against an activist who had had the nerve to ask him about the fact that he's got ties to right-wing, well, fascists, violent fascists. And yes, he resigned from a police department in 2007 before he had to face discipline for slapping a black man while on duty. He also posts videos that the maggots absolutely love in which he refers to criminals who exist only in the thin gray settlings that slosh between his ears and pass for brains as animals. He also calls them heathens. He makes the rounds on the white wing extremist circuit. He's spoken at Oath Keepers events. He's sold T-shirts at events that have the Free Percent Militia logo on it. He's threatened to shoot black militia members who took part in Black Lives Matter marches. Jeff Charlotte knew all of this, and he said, if you're laughing at Representative Clay Higgins while using militia speak, referencing military-grade maps and telling Trumpers to know your bridges, recall that Canadian far-rightists held border bridges recently in a tense standoff. This is on the table. And Charlotte went on to say that what Higgins was calling for was likely a county-level insurrection. Take this seriously, he implored. Perimeter probe. Higgins thinks indictment precedes bigger attack. Our POTUS, real POTUS, Trump. Hold equals stand back and stand by. Buckle up, prepare for war. 150K, military scale maps, know your bridges, militia speak, for prepare to seize bridges. Wonder what bridges they might want to seize. Maybe the Key Bridge from Northern Virginia into D.C.? Isn't there also a Woodrow Wilson Bridge? Weren't some of those very things part and parcel of the planning? The seditious planning for January the 6th? And, of course, Kevers McCarthy doesn't have a damned word to say about it. Because he can't. And remember, a lot of the insurrectionists, a lot of the domestic terrorists from January 6th, had a real good time that day. Consider Marcus Maley, described by prosecutors as a lifelong criminal with 33 convictions on his record, two of which were for assaulting a police officer. He stands accused of attacking police at the Capitol during the domestic terrorist attack of January 6, 2021. Well, he stood before a federal judge today for sentencing. At his sentencing hearing today, he denied pepper spraying police and said he was only occupying space. In an online fundraiser that's raised almost $17,000, he calls himself a January 6th POW. He's had a public defender the entire time and has not incurred legal fee number one. In the sentencing memo, prosecutor Stephen Rancourt said Maley admitted to being proud of what he had done at the Capitol and that he had bragged about it. Despite seeing police officers assaulted, injured, and distressed on January 6th and knowing that it was a bad day for members of Congress and the police officers who had to live through the riot, Maley reiterated his experience that day was fun. Well, prosecutors wanted 15 years and 8 months for him. Remember, he had 33 convictions on his record, including two of assaulting police. He went up the river today for 6 years. Just 6 years. With the exception of people like Enrique Tarrio and Stuart Rhodes and a couple of others, there really aren't stiff prices being paid for the insurrection. And an unpunished failed insurrection is merely a dress rehearsal for the one that works. It may turn out that we are now living through the most momentous challenge to constitutional governance that this country has ever known. Maybe short of 1860 to 1865. And that is terrifying. The risks here are both high and grave. Today, a former representative from New Jersey, a Democrat, Tom Malinkowski, started calling out his Republican former colleagues for ignoring the call to civil war openly and notoriously put out by Clay Higgins. Malinkowski said, most of this guy's House GOP colleagues know he's dangerous and unhinged, but they tolerate him. That is all. And Higgins has been running his mouth since the first impeachment. Back in 2019, he said, I've descended into the belly of the beast. I've witnessed the terror within, and I raise committed to oppose the insidious forces. But this unjust and weaponized impeachment brought upon us by the same socialists who threatened unborn life in the womb, who threatened Second Amendment protections of every American patriot, and who have long ago determined that they would organize and conspire to overthrow President Trump. And now he's calling for civil war. And there are far, far too unthinkably many, but at least who agree with him. But at least there's one little place where perhaps we recognize the danger. Now, Ralphs wants to know, is Kevin McCarthy's pro-Trump statement him trying to appease the feed-em carcass? Sure it is. The man lives under a maggot-covered sword of Damocles. And he never knows when Clanny Granny Bobo Bobert or Andy Biggs or Ralph Norman or any of the other freaks will swing the axe, the headsman's axe. So I think we've got a good overview here for the front porch conversation. And so we'll take a second and see that coming through. Okay, let's see. Let's go over and check in with Brother Bishop Steve. Steve!
Robin, how did I do,
man? You did great.
Okay.
Absolutely, absolutely a pro job.
Good, good.
Didn't even have to call a guy.
I thought, man, if I cheese, I mess this up, she's gonna get cheesed off, man.
She never gets cheesed off.
Well, you're a good egg, Charlie Brown. I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
But I thought that was wild this morning when you and I. I mean, you had to be a part of the Horn congregation to even got that. If I'd have texted any other my other friends that wasn't a part of this thing and said to them,
Pedro drew the short straw.
Yeah, they would have thought, what is this guy? What is he smoking, man? I mean, but you got it right away. You know, you started cracking up. So it was hilarious, you know.
Oh, that poor bastard.
Oh, man.
Maybe he lives for those moments, but. So you got to tell. I mean, was it absolute bedlam? Was it mayhem?
It was brutal. All they had was Joe Biden and his 5 million. Joe Biden. What about his 5 million? I'm thinking 5 million. How about Jared and me whacking my daddy? You know, all your little witticisms keep popping up in my head. That they got a billion apiece. You know. And that's all they had. And why aren't we talking about that, Pedro? Well, you never want to talk about that. You're biased. You're biased. They did everything but spit him out and hang him up on the wall and let him drip dry, man. I felt really bad for the guy. I seriously did. But that's what happens when you're the mod, you know. He had to just sit there and take it.
And that's the problem with Washington Journal, Steve.
And they're trolls.
They're dedicated to sitting there and taking it because all opinions are valid. Even if someone calls in and says there's a race of men in the trees and we need tough legislation, Pedro says, thanks for calling. I wait all day for calls like these.
Right, right. One guy called and said, I'm not very articulate and I don't really know how to put my thoughts into words. And Karen looked at me and said, why the fuck is he calling a talking show then? I don't know.
Well, not just that, but somebody who's not very articulate doesn't say, I'm not very articulate.
Right? I don't know.
They say something like, I don't talk real good, Pedro.
Yeah, well, he did, but I didn't want to goon on him like that, you know, from that angle. But, yeah, it was crazy, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, Pedro must get a Thorazine shot before he goes out. There's no way he could sit there and just.
No, his producer just has a Thorazine blowgun dart. You know. Hey, Pedro, look over there. What? You know.
But yeah, see, they troll it. They spider over all three lines. What they do is they'll call in on the Democrat line and say, well, I used to be a Democrat, but they'll call on the independent line. And of course, it's. The majority of the show has turned into nothing but right-wing maggots, so it's very difficult to listen to. Maybe 30% of the calls are people that's got some damn horse sense, you know.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I used to be a Democrat. I didn't leave the Democrat Party. Democrat Party left me.
Yeah, and that's how they get in. But Pedro's getting wise to that now, and he's cutting people. He's hanging up on them, calling it on the appropriate line. So at least he is going that far. But it's very difficult to. But I knew today was just going to be. There was no way they could avoid it.
There was no way you were going to miss it. I wonder.
No.
I wonder if. I wonder if Todd was watching too.
Todd, if you're out there, hop on, man. Because
yeah,
yeah
call
I'm
the
sure
call
probably,
the. Call the stress line, 844-843-4676, because Todd don't do Skype. But, yeah, 844-THE-HORN, because with a new phone, the stress line has been working
tremendous.
Spectacularly. Even Scary Jerry's calls have been coming through crystal clear. So the entire thing was my fault. The entire stress line problem was my fault because I was using an ancient device, and now we have a fresh one.
And I'm really hopeful that Rick and or Steve will join in on this because we need some legal minds. Of course, you had one because I heard a new term today that I'm not really familiar with. It's called mens rea. And what that means is, you know, everybody says, what about Biden and the documents?
Well, oh, I've got one of those stories in the stack. But yeah, mens rea is literally, literally in Latin, that is mind thing.
That's what it is. Like, I'll give you an example, and please tell me if I'm wrong. If I'm an accountant and I just make an honest goof, more than likely they're not going to come down too heavy on me.
You did not have you did not have the requisite bad in or criminal intent.
Right, but if I'm an accountant and I intentionally funnel money into my account, then they're going to come down on me. Is that what that means? That's the way I understood it.
Yeah, kind of. It does. Yeah. Basically, if you have the sufficient intent to do a bad thing, then they're going to nail you.
Right, and that's whenever if you have any MAGA associates that always say, well, what about Biden and his documents when he was the Senate? Well, he didn't have any bad intent. The mens rea thing kind of comes into play, correct?
Correct. You're absolutely right.
So we're giving people pearls.
I'm looking here. Let's see. Get rid of Clay Higgins.
And while you're looking, I wanted to get your opinion on this judge.
Aileen Cannon.
That's just out of all the judges out there. How did this happen? Do you think that's coincidence? Or are we being rat effed once again? You know.
Well, jurisdictionally, and Billable Rick would really be handy on this because he's worked extensively in the federal system. Yep. But jurisdictionally, the crimes happened at Mar-a-Lago, Mag-a-Loco, Mag-a-Lardass, whatever. And so jurisdiction would seem to reside in the Southern District of Florida. Now, there's lots of judges.
Yeah, what are the odds you get stuck with this same one that gave Trump a pass?
Well, she may wind up trying the whole darn thing. I would be surprised because the fact that the 11th Circuit, the wild-eyed right-wing 11th Circuit, even they slapped her down. And so they could force her recusal. But it may simply be a matter of she's the one who issued the search warrant that resulted in the incriminating documents being discovered. And it could be that she is merely going to arraign him because the search warrant stuff has already been long since dealt with. And she may just be on for the arraignment because she's the arraignment's judge.
And I heard one of the other talking heads speculating that being she's already had a hand in on this, then she would... Somehow she gets preferential assignment to it. Now, well, I don't know. They would use the Latin word, and I don't know what it means. I didn't pick it up.
Yeah, that would be that was what I was talking about. Saying that, you know, she's the one who issued the search warrant, so she may have jurisdiction over the preliminary preliminary proceedings. But I would be sincerely surprised if she winds up trying it.
But we heard Jack Smith speak for the first time today. I mean, that was kind of cool. He's a badass, man.
Yes, he is.
And I don't think that he would have let this play out the way it did if it was all going to just, you know, get stalled into eternity.
Yeah, this isn't theater. He's hunting, well... He has a pelt that he wants to nail to the wall, and that pelt is orange.
So what is your time frame? I'm thinking 8 to 16 months, or is that sound about right?
Jack Smith said, and he used constitutional language for this, he said he wanted a speedy trial. Now, what that means is subject to interpretation, but I would say within a year.
But what's the 70-day item that comes in every once in a while?
Hello, Roger.
Hey, Roger. How are you?
Fine.
What do you mean?
I've been hearing something that about 70 days between arraignment and a court appearance.
Yeah, that's probably the discovery window, I'm guessing. Because at arraignment, I would presume that the defense will demand discovery. And then they will have the government will have 70 days in order to provide that discovery.
Okay, I just heard a thing about 70 days, and I wasn't sure whether that was the start of the trial or, but you've explained it as a discovery window.
And the discovery will be damning. Because the funny thing is that a defendant is entitled to discovery of the state's evidence to be used at trial. But, well, for the most part, they probably already have it all. And I would one of the things that intrigues me most is something that Darlene raised earlier, namely that whether there might be evidence that comes to light throughout of all of this that winds up with Ivana being all dug up.
Well, I said when she got buried that and that golf tournament, they were coming in and doing re-landscaping at that golf course for that LIV or LVI tournament that they put on there.
Yeah.
I said that's an easy way for him to be passing documents was to put him in the coffin. They buried her, and then the construction crew came in and revamped the golf course, and it wouldn't have drawn any attention that there was a fresh dig and earth and all that. And in the dark of night, they just dug up the coffin and took out the papers and disappeared them off to Saudi Arabia. I called that one back at the tournament when the tournament was.
And then and then the Saudis would disseminate them to whom?
Well,
Russia? They've been playing footsie with Russia lately. China?
Yeah, but that was along about the time that Jared Kushner got his $2 billion. And we were talking about how come Jared Kushner got $2 billion. And I came up and said, well, the documents Trump stole, he put them in the coffin. And when they had the tournament there, they just simply dug up the coffin and took all the documents and then paid Jared his $2 billion.
Good work if you can get it.
Well, see, that way Trump doesn't get busted for taking the money.
Sure. I think there's going to be all kinds of wackiness goes down in the coming weeks and months. It was kind of humorous this morning on CNN, who God knows have had their problems lately. The co-host of CNN this morning is Phil Mattingly. And somebody booked GOP advisor David Urban. God knows why. To come on and talk about the Trump indictment. And this was kind of a surprising moment.
Morning. So how will Trump's legal issues impact the race, right? What does it mean for the politics of it all? CNN senior political commentator Scott Jennings and President Trump's former campaign advisor and Republican strategist David Urban.
I'm sorry,
me now.
Why did you guys start laughing?
It's like I'm trying to read and
you're laughing. You act like we know. Well, you've got a lot of past precedent here that you can kind of point to some degree. So tell us exactly what's going to happen over the course. No, but I do think this is important, and I think you could listen to some of the voices that Randy had spoken to last night, and you know where that kind of chunk of the Republican Party, former president's base, ain't going anywhere. They are rock solid. Yeah. My biggest question, and I've been asking this all morning, probably boring Poppy at this point.
Never.
But if you're a Republican campaign, and he's leading by 30 points, and this massive thing happens, and the only thing you can do is not attack him on it for fear of losing support, how can you possibly win a primary?
Hey, I don't think you can, right? I think that's the answer, right, Phil? Think about this. 74 million people voted for President Trump in 2020. And the numbers he's polling someplace, in the 30, 40. So let's assume that there's 25, 26 million, 30 million Americans that still love and follow Donald Trump. And you're not going to be able to pry those folks free. They're going to only double. The president's going to double down on being indignant. And, you know, his, what you've been saying yesterday and in previous after the Alvin Bragg indictment. And, you know, there's not going to be any daily.
Yeah, being indignant also translates as methinks he doth protest too much, but never mind.
People will flock to him and feel that this is a political prosecution. And, you know, I think Scott and I were talking about this before. The best thing DOJ could do, and I don't want to step on his line, is what, Scott, today?
Oh, well, if I were Hunter Biden, I'd be very nervous. I mean, the Republican answer to these things overnight has been,
Hunter Biden, the Benghazi of our time. We will hear about Hunter Biden till we're all fit to lose our mind.
How is it that Donald Trump's the only person that gets persecuted? You got Hunter Biden running around out there doing stuff. You got Joe Biden documents in the garage. Hillary Clinton bleaching servers, you know.
Bleaching servers? Okay.
One guy who's currently under federal investigation that we know of. So I was just postulating outside. What if they did indict him today? Would that take that off the table?
To be clear, though, all of those things either had been investigated or are still parts of ongoing investigation.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's happening right now. And so, but the Republican mindset is, if you're a Republican or if you're Donald Trump, you get held to one standard, and if you're these other people, you get held. That's the mindset.
Mindset is different than fact.
Yeah, but they can both be true at the same time, right? You could say that. Listen, this case against Donald Trump moving forward is true and correct, and the mindset that held by a third of Americans is true and correct, right? Those can both exist and be true.
Can I ask you as a former strategist for former President Trump? I thought it was really interesting that renowned legal scholar Jonathan Turley said basically he can really, really run on this effectively. And he said he could even run on pardoning himself.
Well, I don't think he'd have to pardon himself. I think.
No, run on.
You know, running that if you elect me,
yes.
I'll pardon myself.
Yes. Would you advise that if you were still campaign, in the camp?
That's the campaign motto. Pardon me. Trump 24. No, I wouldn't say. I don't think that's a great strategy. I think the strategy is, look, I did nothing wrong here. I think that the strategy is these documents, I declassified them. I have the authority to do so.
But we know from Paul Ricci.
No, I understand. That's a strategy I'd run on. And if people are waiting to see Donald Trump in the box during a trial, that's not going to happen. Here's what's going to happen. There will not be a trial in this case ever. Donald Trump, I'm just saying, it'll happen in 2025 if it's going to happen. Donald Trump's going to become president. And there won't be a trial. That's my prediction.
You raise your eyebrows.
Well, let me just say there is polling that indicates that a majority of Americans take these cases seriously, even though Republicans in the short term are definitely rallying to Trump.
Independents, and it's not like a 1 or 2 point majority.
You saw Harry's numbers this morning.
Yeah. Independents don't like this if he's under these clouds. And he never got a majority of the popular vote or the most popular votes twice. Has anything happened since that to change that? Does this change? Highly unlikely that if you're under two, three, or four indictments, this enhances your chances of winning an
election. This is actually the point that I wanted to get at. I've been trying to figure out how any Republican opponent, if they can't attack him on this, can possibly win. But the spin forward, which I also think is relevant to, you know, somebody you're very close to in terms of the Senate Minority Leader and Republicans, there's a reason why Republican leaders in the Senate have not said a lot up to this point. The ability to keep the House. There's a general election, too. Love the primaries.
Yeah.
There is a general election.
And this, all those base
if
voters.
If you're a Republican looking around right now, well, this cannot be viewed as a positive development.
Well, let me push back on you, because look at the individual maps. In the Senate, the total battleground to win back the Senate is in West Virginia, Ohio, and Montana. Donald Trump could get indicted 400 times, and he's going to.
So, thoughts?
They're fucking nuts.
You want to hear nuts, Roger? Listen to Mark Levin. He was losing his shit last night. I mean, he was bad. I thought he was going to have a stroke.
Oh, we can hope. The man, you mean the man with a voice made for print?
Yes, that bald-headed feller. You know what I'm talking about. He's crazy, man.
My lawyer, F. Lee Levin.
He was getting all red-faced and shouting, and I just thought he was going to lose his shit, you know.
Well, one of the things I found interesting was last night when I went to bed, it was seven charges. And then this morning I find out it's 37 charges.
38.
Has anybody read them all? Yeah. I hadn't had time yet. I'm going to.
Have you read New York them? Has him for 34, and that's not counting January 6th or Georgia. Blows me away. I have this constant thought that keeps coming back and back and back. What would the reaction of the MAGA Republicans be if Joe Biden, or particularly Barack Obama, had some 71 or 72 counts being filed felonies against them, and most of them are felonies? What would Fox News be doing to a Democrat that was trying to run for president, no matter how big their stature had been before these counts came down?
And he'd already been hit with a civil case of sexual harassment.
Yeah, and been hit with a sexual case for, what, $7 million? How would the MAGA press be dealing with that? And all I do is point out, you're a fucking hypocrite. You know, I mean, they wanted to jail Hillary Clinton, said, lock her up, lock her up, lock her up. And she testified for 11 hours and they couldn't find a goddamn thing about it. Nothing. And here, I was listening to MSNBC earlier, and they played several vignettes of Trump on his campaign speech talking about how the first thing he was going to do was crack down on how government employees deal with government secrets and the meaning of secret and confidential and top secret. And he was going to make sure nothing like that ever happened.
Well, remember, Roger, a bunch of the felonies he's now facing are felonies because he signed those felonies into law.
Yeah, he pushed all that any breach of confidentiality with regard to a document is now a felony and has to be tried as a felony, not a misdemeanor.
In other words, he hoisted himself on his own petard.
Under his eye, by his own hand.
Yeah.
And Handmaiden's reference there.
You know, I think it's beautiful that they're felonies because he demanded they become felonies, but the Republicans who are standing by him, and apparently none of the Senate Republicans have stood by him yet, but there's a lot of House Republicans that have been out preaching and bitching about how this is all a smokescreen, election interference, da-da-da-da-da. How would Fox News be dealing with this if it were a Democrat? And if they're dealing with it differently because it's him, that shows the absolute total hypocrisy of the Republican Party.
Well, as to F. Lee Levin, my friend, my counsel, F. Lee Levin, again with the pineapples? He came plumb unglued. And thanks to Lee in New York for finding the audio and sending it along. 7 minutes of totally unhinged. Get the hockey puck, y'all.
Where a president of the United States, where a former president faces 100 years in federal prison? Is this some kind of a sick joke on the American people? Joe Biden says he never told them what to do. Joe Biden had to sign off on this becoming a National Archives case to have it go to the Department of Justice. Who does he think he's lying to? The American people? This is a guy that's got documents from the time he was in the U.S. Senate, for God's sakes, in his garage. I don't want to hear from the legal analysts the technicalities about false statements and obstruction. This should never have been a criminal case. Willful retention of documents. Well, what's the unwillful retention of documents mean? They're throwing all these process crimes and all these crimes that grow out of the criminal investigation against Trump. What did he do with the documents? Did he sell?
I mean, Effley Levin looks like he's got some age on him, so he should be able to remember the ancient adage, it's the cover-up that fucks you. Yeah, that was the lesson out of the Nixon administration. But this is too good. I mean, I think if I had a little higher resolution on my... there you go. There you go, Steve in Georgia, Stan. Mens rea, asshole. Attaboy, Steve.
Sell them to the enemy? No! That's why we have an Espionage Act, not the trick of a president. What did he do? Did he burn them all? No! The government has all the documents back. So there is no violation of the Presidential Records Act at this point. But they throw the book at him. They go after his attorneys. They make them testify. They're attorneys under the crime fraud exemption to attorney-client privilege. That means he didn't have due process. His own lawyers were being subjected to interrogations. And they had hundreds of in-person people testifying in front of grand juries. Thousands of collections of documents. For what? For what? And they indict him today? They indict him today in Miami? All of a sudden it's in Miami? All of a sudden we have a Florida grand jury? Because the moron in Washington figured out that there are venue issues that could lose him his case. This guy, this prosecutor, he lost 8-0 in the U.S. Supreme Court when they overturned the conviction of the former governor of Virginia because this jerk took a statute and expanded it. A jury in North Carolina wouldn't convict John Edwards because this jerk took a campaign statute and expanded it. And he's taken this case and he's undermining the country and he's interfering with a presidential election. And let me be clear, as Jarrett said, the Attorney General of the United States made this final decision.
No, he didn't.
This is not the independent counsel statute. This is a special counsel appointed by the Attorney General under a Department of Justice regulation. This Attorney General, who pretends he's Helen Keller, he made the decision
to
indict the former president. And they made the decision to interfere in this election. You want to talk about an insurrection? This is an insurrection. And that's exactly what's going on here.
I just want to point out that if this is an insurrection, where's the poopy smeared on the walls of the Capitol?
Right? Did you see the veins popping out in his head? I mean, the audio does it justice, but the video.
Oh, man, yeah.
He's all red faced and the veins.
He needs a producer with a blowgun and a Thorazine dart. Hey, Mark.
Calm down, dude.
God, that's precious. Hey, I need to interrupt just for a second. I hope I don't harm the flow of the program or anything. But we got a whopping fundraising hole to fill. And it would be awesome if we could not be a goose egg this evening. We are down around 1450, I think I said. 1450. So $250 of last Friday would cover last Friday on the front porch. I mean, that's how, because we finished May in a whopping big hole, and we're just trying to fill in as best we can. And it's rough. But thanks to anybody who wants to jump in, it would be much, much appreciated. I think I've damaged poor Ralph's well-being. She just said, "What the fuck is Mark Levin talking about?" Well, he doesn't have to be talking about anything, Ralph's. The people who tune into Mark Levin just aren't particularly concerned with content or meaning or coherence. But responding to Mark Levin, David Korn, journalist, said, "Today's a good day to remember that Donald Trump said this. Throughout 2016, he castigated Hillary Clinton for using a private email server instead of a secure government one.
I'm going to enforce all laws concerning the protection of classified information. No one will be above the law. The way she handled her emails disqualifies her from the presidency."
Really? I guess because woman? Because Democrat? Because Democratic woman?
But not me. Definitely not me. I handled classified information slow on the driveway.
Oh, God. And Ralph's does have a $25 challenge out there, so we could get down to $1,400 if someone would kick in $25. That would be really good and much appreciated. Thank you, Jeremy, for jumping in. So, actually, if someone meets Ralph's challenge, we will be down to $1,380. Thank you, Ralph's. Thank you. Thank you, Jeremy. No goose egg. Yay. But as to the documents, Matt in San Francisco says, first of all, Jack Smith still floods my basement. Wait, that was, it shouldn't have been a Trump voice. First of all, Jack Smith still floods my basement. Second, Trump is just a slob. Boxes of documents on a stage in a bathroom. So there's an event at Mar-a-Lago. Partygoers are in the white gold ballroom, and on stage are multiple bankers' boxes of documents. Talk about tacky. Then I have to use the bathroom. Inside, I see even more banker boxes stacked 6 feet high. I mean, I know the Secret Service is only there to protect the former president, but how do you not notice the boxes and boxes of top-secret documents? Oh, Matt says, I have so many questions. The people who still support this guy are complete and total idiots. Yes, with a caveat, Matt, they're idiots, complete and total, but some of them are also not particularly fond of constitutional governance. So there's that. Oh, and let me go over to the stress line real quick. I almost forgot. I don't know who we got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's Scary over here.
Hey!
I bought I'm happy about a new phone is because I could talk to you and it's not all buzzy, but it turns out it was you.
Yeah, it was me. I'm into you for your new phone. Sorry about that.
Yeah, it's this phone does everything in the modern age wrong, and it's the best sounding phone I've had in the modern age. So I can't. I may get another phone, but I'm not gonna lose it. I mean, it sounds great. Really, I even talked to a bill collector earlier, and I was like, "Damn, that sounds good."
Well, welcome aboard.
It's really that good. But even during a bill collection call, I was marveling at how good it sounded and how clean, you know, connecting was. Just nerd shit. What's up with this? You know, I'm giddy. The Panthers won in overtime 3-2. Pat Robertson died. And the original Drill Baby Drill, James Baker, was that his name?
No, James Watt.
Yesterday? James Watt, yeah, fuck that guy. That was the original Throw Baby Girl guy. That was the guy who started mapping out national parks for drilling. I remember that shit, and I was, I don't even know if I was 15 yet. But I remember that guy. He was particularly punctual. With that said, if the Magaloids wanted to jump up and down in Miami, I don't think it's going to work. Cubans aren't big on espionage shit, even they understand that. I think this being in Miami instead of Palm Beach was brilliant.
Well, I think the jurisdiction covers both, Jerry. It's just entirely the Southern District of Florida.
They have a federal court in Palm Beach, though.
Yeah, but federal court districts have multiple buildings. But they're all the same district.
Yeah, but I'm saying logistically, putting it in Miami instead of Palm, you're not really understanding what I'm saying.
Okay, yeah. Miami is a culturally distinct area as opposed from, say, Palm Beach.
Palm Beach is Megatown. Even though I lean, you know, and they're not going to be able to keep cameras out, this is epic. I literally don't know of a story in my life. You know, other than global warming, this is important. I said nuclear documents in September. I did. And the whole, you know what? I wouldn't play a checkers game against Jack Smith. I'm just putting that is a serious dude. He is not fucking about.
I said, since you started with the memes earlier today, I'll mention this, Jerry. I saw a meme of Jack Smith. In fact, our pal Joy in Ann Arbor was the one who posted it. God, she gets some killer memes. It showed Jack Smith in his court at International Criminal Court at The Hague robes, and someone had photoshopped a crown onto him, and the caption said, bring me this orange-faced one. He amuses me.
So, you know, I think every time he insulted his family or his wife or whatever, Jack just added the charge. I really do. He seems like that kind of guy. 38 charges, and it was all for the serious shit. That's what the charges are about.
Yeah, this ain't ticky-tacky.
It was all for the classified and the super secret and shoot yourself in the face if you read this stuff. Because there was a lot of stuff there. And
some of it was, some of it, like you said, some of it was nuclear. Some of it was third-party foreign intel.
And the mumblings that Putin did at the beginning of the Ukraine war, I was like, why is he talking like a guy who knows where you put your 50 caliber bullets there? Just, you know, being country for a second. He's being really specific. And if, you know, nobody knows where nukes are. They say they do, but I'm sure they do now. But that's part of the defense thing, not knowing where they are, so you can't hit anything you don't know what to hit. I don't know. I think we've been sold out. And I think it's going to come out. And then we're going to go to civil war because they don't care. Trump made it okay to say the N-word. That's literally all I can think of what they got out of that president. Literally that. And the ability to wave a big stupid flag. Although I haven't seen any stupid flags lately. Gotta be honest.
Well, just up the road from me, dude still has his fuck Biden banner in the yard. We got some real diehards and hard cases around here, apparently.
Robin Rick just texted me. He's going to try to hop in here if he can.
I would love that.
That'd be interesting. I would too. Because this is his wheelhouse, you know?
Yeah.
So, fingers crossed.
I mean, at this point, I'm like, how did Joe Biden hurt you? Seriously, he's the most obnoxious man I've ever met. You can't be mad at him. He's, as far as politicians go, he's almost lovable. I mean, he's like a useful, he feels like a useful Ford at this point. I mean, it's overlay, it's almost identical. Except he's getting shit done. I mean, literally, Ford was installed because he wasn't Trump, he wasn't Nixon. That was literally the whole reason. Plus, I mean, shit. Biden's an effective politician. He's pulled off 75% of his agenda with everybody kicking and screaming and a Trump at the gate. I give him I put the gold jacket on, seriously.
Well, Robin, there's folks in here we haven't even heard from.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Steve. Let's go around the room.
We got Jeremy. Haven't heard a peep out of him. Kevin's in here. I mean, a lot of
good Kevin's
folks.
In. Hey, Kevin.
Yeah.
Hi, Robin. Hi, everybody.
How are you?
Hey, Kev.
Hey.
Good. Just driving home from work.
Good day.
Yeah. The air's better here. We had the last 3 days we had from the fire up in Canada. Smoke drifting down here, and it wasn't as bad as New York, but sometimes I was out there, you know, I could definitely tell it was. I almost put a mask on yesterday, but it started clearing up like about 2 p.m. yesterday, and then today it's been perfect. Today was fine, but like Boston, it's all green. It's like they never got hit. It seemed like more west and south that you go, like New York and Pennsylvania. And so, but, you know, we were still in the red, though. We were still like one, I forget, is it parts per million or something like that, 150?
Yeah.
I guess 300 is like, 300 is like really bad.
Yeah, stay inside.
Yeah, so.
I would say it was a good.
Yeah, I deliver mail for a living, so that's what I do. I'm outside all day, so if it ever got to 300, I wouldn't go to work. I'd say, look, you know, you do what you got to do. But I ain't coming in. But whatever.
Yeah, pulmonary collapse is nothing to fool around with.
No, definitely not.
Well, so you're up there in blue Massachusetts. Are people? I mean, have you tuned into your local talk radio lately?
Well, the local WHYN, which used to be a great station when I was growing up in the '70s. You know, music and nice local part of the community. Of course, it got bought out. It's been a conservative station for going on 25 years now. I didn't really get a chance to see what those bozos were talking about this morning. They're just typical, you know, they get the talking points, you know, when they get their marching orders and, but, you know, that newspaper, the Epoch Times.
Yes.
You ever see it?
Yes.
Well, I found out. Three of my customers just—they just got it. I it's like I know who's a maggot now, and I'm not gonna say their names, obviously. But I'm like, oh, I was just kind of like, and then the library of all places, the Amherst Library called the Jones Library, you know, they got one, and I'm like, are they just trying to be fair and balanced here or what? But anyway, that's a crazy ass magazine.
It is absolutely crazier than a sprayed roach.
Yeah, I just happened to look at the front page. I couldn't help but notice that another person had it like about a year ago, and then they moved out. But they used to get it every week, and I like just look at the front page, and it's like the craziest like MAGA, you know, conspiracy theories right there on the front page. You know, it's like the National Enquirer, but like on steroids for MAGA. You know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, this Eileen Cannon thing, you know, I wonder if they're just like daring her to pull some shit, you know what I'm saying?
It could be, but by the same token though, Kevin. Let me check here. I had a note from Clarence who saw Glenn Kirshner on the air earlier today. And Clarence said, Kirshner said there's a rotation of judges in the district, and it just happens to be her turn.
She was on the roulette wheel.
But I think, I think if she says one loony thing, though, the 11th Circuit will probably slap her down.
Oh, man, they'll come in at midnight. She'll say it at 2 in the afternoon, and by 10 o'clock that night, she'll be gone. You know what I mean?
One may hope.
But one may hope, yeah. But,
And thanks, Clarence.
As Michael Rappaport said, he's out of favors.
Hopefully Canada gets enough rain and these fires, you know, stay under control and, you know, won't happen again, but
these fires aren't going to go out until next winter.
Yeah,
Jesus.
They're saying too now. I was looking at the Guardian that the summer ice, they're saying that the Arctic summer ice is never going to come back, even if we severely curtailed our emissions. They think it's that far gone that the Arctic ice in the summer is not going to be there anymore. I mean, it'll be there in the winter, but it won't be there all summer long like it had been. So.
Well, hey, first of all, let me thank Jack in Shreveport. We are done. We have met Ralph's challenge. So we are now down to 1380.
Let me switch this podcast off. Okay, hold on. There, I guess it got switched off. Hold on here.
So thank you, Jack and Shreveport.
Let me read this. There we go.
Rick, you look like a rock star, man.
And there's Billable Rick.
Hey, Ginger. Yeah, hold on, guys. Hold on. Let me call you back, Ginger, okay? I've got to get rid of this call. All right, bye. Let's see here. Yeah, I can't talk, guys.
Okay. Sounds good, Billable. And Billable's got his video on, and he just broke up. Yeah, well, hopefully we will.
He'll be back.
Yeah,
he'll
we will benefit from his manifest wisdom later on. Jack, are you there?
I stepped out for a little bit, but I just came back, so I missed some of what y'all are saying. Let's see. I had a topic in my head, and then had to go get the mail and lost track of what I was doing. I was really interested in that. Now I can't think of his name. That Louisiana congressman.
Oh, Clay Higgins.
Yeah. And then you said that there was a congressman from somewhere else, like calling him out. I think, or
yeah, a former congressman.
From
New Jersey.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Malinkowski.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was thinking. Yeah, that guy's, man, he's freaking nuts, man. I've kind of haven't been catching as much online stuff, and that's the way I get my newspaper, local paper and stuff, and so I don't know. I haven't looked recently as to, what they've reported on, for crazy congressmen. I'd catch something like that. I'd probably catch it on a tweet. I haven't been doing Twitter as much.
Yeah, who wants to, who wants to go to Twitter, right?
Yeah, I just had some constraints on my time, and so I haven't been doing that as much. I get like a daily email from my and it only has like a few selected headlines or story links for my local paper. But man, I had no idea what that 150K thing was, until you said, but, where's like, I don't know, the FBI or whoever the hell, some of this stuff just seems like there ought to be a line somewhere, incitement, Twitter, whatever, ain't on the Congress floor, right? I mean, that's where he posted this, right?
Yeah, he posted it on Twitter, right? Yeah.
Yeah. So it seemed, they're not really protected. I mean, they're not protected by the same thing they are protected by when they're making floor speeches, right? So... Fuck, man.
Well, he's a Lulu, and in fact, I was just trying to look up where the hell he's from.
Yeah, I never can keep track.
But it certainly calls into question the people who vote for him.
Oh, well, the whole
And now Andy Biggs has come alongside him and joined him in his call for war.
Fuck.
Let's see. He was born in New Orleans. He's from the Louisiana 3rd Congressional District. He is 62 years old. Military service, allegiance, United States. I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah, really. I mean, you know, this kind of stuff they're doing, basically, you know, whatever these laws are, or you know, not filling posts, it's all kind of sabotage, and it's kind of, you know, at some point it's indistinguishable, you know, if it's indistinguishable from, let's say, what Russia might do to attack, or subdue, you know, our country or our government, you know, I mean, then whose side are they on? You know, I mean, it's like they're doing the same shit that Putin would do if he wanted to screw us, you know, wanted to fuck with us.
I have a little bit more information on Clay Higgins. Okay. The third Louisiana congressional district runs from the Texas line eastward to the Atchafalaya River.
Okay.
So it is 68% white, 24% black, 3.5% Hispanic, 2% of biracial or multiracial, and 1.5% Asian. It is an R+21 district. And he replaced Charles Bustany,
mm-hmm.
who was from Lafayette, who was there for 12 years, another Republican.
Mm-hmm.
But Clay Higgins is a dangerous...
Oh, yeah.
Freak. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's really the only word to use. And what, where did I just, oh, there it is. No. I just wanted to call this story up about Andy Biggs, who is King Maggot. Andy Biggs said, we have now reached a war phase, eye for an eye. And so because he's a brave and bold, God-fearing Republican, when Bloomberg News reached out to his spokescreep, the spokescreep said, well, he didn't mean literal war. Yeah, no. I mean, then you don't say war. Oh, and by the way, the Daily Beast also reporting, Precious Princess Iwanka, my daddy Trump Kushner, is staying far, far away from daddy. She wants nothing to do with this, according to sources close to the family. But she does live in Miami, which should make things interesting.
Yeah.
She is said to have sort of disappeared. One source said, she'll be staying far away from daddy. And they want to put his presidency in the rear view. Because
Robin, we're always trolling for newcomers. Theo's never been in here before.
Is Theo in there?
Yeah, he's in the Skype room. I don't know if he's able to.
Theo, I hope it works. That.
Hi, Robin. Are you hearing me?
I do. Yes. We all do. This is wonderful.
Very good. My God. I've been signed on, what, 15 seconds, and I haven't managed to screw it up technically yet?
Easy. I am impressed. Easy. Be good to yourself.
No, it's just my inadvertent comedy trick is to mess up anything I'm trying to do with the computer.
Oh, that's no, stop it. That's my job.
It's almost as good at maggot Republicans producing accidentally priceless gems of malapropism. It's their best thing.
Well, you know, you play to your strengths.
It's all they got going. Yeah. Anyway, it's been interesting to hear from everybody. And I hope that the folks living directly downwind of the fires in Canada are managing to shelter or, you know, go back to using your filter masks. No matter what they tell you about COVID being over, that fire is not going away anymore.
Yeah, that fire's not over. And curiously, no. Masks come in handy for lots of particulate matters. But yes, you need one that's rated for like PM2.5.
Yeah, actually, we've got those. Well, Leah and I use them for COVID. My dear wife, being the chemist that she is,
smart lady.
Definitely. And we've had experience with fires and smoke of that level because we got hit with it actually in 2020 during the on top of the BLM, you know, demonstrations and the feds jumping in with that sort of Costa Gavras force of little green men in Portland, where they were literally hauling people in off the streets who were within a couple of blocks of one of the demonstrations and handing them some paperwork and saying, sign this. And it was, you know, all about some sort of connection to Antifa. Fortunately, our local folks were smart enough to simply say, bullshit, I want legal representation. And essentially stonewalled the feds. We still don't entirely know where the people, who the people that, Rod, oh God, Rod, what's his face with the perpetual bad 5 o'clock shadow? The Border Patrol guy. We don't know who the people were he brought in yet. But on top of everything else, including, you know, street uprisings and such, we had wildfires and a huge pull of dangerous smoke. We literally had the worst air pollution on Earth until a storm blew through, cleared it out, rained. Ironically,
Even worse than the air pollution that came from the eruption of, are you there, Darlene? Eyjafjallajökull. I still remembered it. Sorry, had to do that, Theo.
No, I'm remembering the name of the volcano that was Iceland.
Yeah.
Or Scandinavia.
Iceland, Eyjafjallajökull.
Oh, yeah. Well, Iceland is essentially a big volcanic caldera. I mean, that's pretty much all that island is. So.
No, but Darlene and I, a couple of Fridays back, had an entire exchange over pronouncing Eyjafjallajökull. Because it doesn't exactly roll right off your tongue.
Not much in Icelandic does if you're not practiced in it. I've had Scandinavian friends who could manage their own languages, but Icelandic took some doing.
Well, it just amazed me when we started talking about air quality. Suddenly, some weird little synapse went, hey, Eyjafjallajökull.
They do that, don't they?
Mm-hmm. I have curious synapses.
So do mine. And mine tend to shut down on stuff that I should know, and then 3 or 4 hours later when it's completely no longer germane to anything in any thought process of mine, some little gem will pop up. Oh, hey, here's what you needed way back then. I mean, well,
Robin, I meant to ask you, did the air quality hit you at
all?
Because it's wasted down here south of Georgia.
No, the goddess of irony has been fairly decent to us because we breathe poison most every day here, so we didn't need any more.
Yeah, I mean, HUI is like 85, which, you know, it's not terrible. It's not like what they're dealing with in Maryland or D.C. or in Kevin's area, but it's not great either, you know. And its particulates from the fires is wafted its way all the way down here.
It's nasty business.
It's not I could tell because Sunday night I woke up with a sore throat. So if you're really sensitive to it, it'll really eat at you, man. Eyes burning and all that crap. Well, I'm glad it hadn't hit you.
For all I know, it has, but it hasn't seemed. We've had beautiful sunny days, and the sunsets have been pretty ordinary.
Good, good, good.
Beautifully ordinary.
Well, Theo, I know you could do it, man. I told you, it's as easy as breathing.
Theo, you're saying.
You're saying that to a guy who needs a CPAP machine to breathe when he sleeps. So,
well, they got them ones now that you just hang around your neck or something, right?
I may end up with one.
Asa said they don't work. You know, I've heard they don't work, but I haven't tried one.
Well, mine may now be obsolete because I've lost a bunch of weight. I'm in better shape, and I have like a sleep study coming up next week. So, if I can get rid of it, I'm thrilled.
I've seen commercials for like an implant that helps you with that, but I don't know how good that is.
First, they'd have to fix my nose because I have a deviated septum.
Deviated septum. What were you doing back in the 80s?
Steve.
It predated the 80s.
Well, inquiring minds, you know.
I was somebody's favorite punching bag in the 60s, so.
I see.
Well, I don't make any bones about the fact that I snorted the gross national product of Peru in the 1980s, so.
Yeah. Well, everybody did, you know. Well, that's what you did.
Steve, it was Atlanta, and it was 1987. What else was I supposed to do?
I was here.
Yeah, what else was
right.
Well, I could never use those drugs because I could never afford them. It's why I can actually remember the 60s with some clarity. I didn't have the finances to get stoned on what everybody else was, you know, out getting hammered on.
Well, in my case, it was just made available.
Oh, well.
No money changed hands.
Well, that was sort of like the alcohol that my late former father-in-law used to provide to my wife and I, and that turned out to be quite enough trouble until I finally said screw it and quit drinking.
You are by far and away, you're not alone in this community in that regard.
Yeah, I get that.
By the way, Randy Radar said we have an air quality alert where he lives, but there's no statement as to why.
Oh, that's curious.
And Matt in San Francisco responded to subject line fires. After dealing with orange skies and darkness in the middle of the day last summer in San Francisco, I can say breathing is so 2010.
Actually, at this point here in Central Oregon, we're delighted not to have wildfire smoke because it tends to hit us in the summers. Right now, we are blessed with rainfall for the first time in weeks. The cats don't quite know what to make of it because all of a sudden things are cloudy, sunny, not sunny, and green out there, and it smells different. But it's lovely, and it's a break from just getting baked.
I completely understand.
Yeah, it was sort of like yesterday as a break from what we've been having to put up with when all of a sudden all those stories hit at once, all those glorious stories. In fact, I was just coming out of a sort of mandated nap because the coffee had worn off when the story about Dolt 45 being indicted was coming into you, and I was listening to it. It's intriguing to listen to somebody on live radio getting a story coming in and trying not to screw it up or to jump on the first potentially inaccurate leads or ticklers that are coming in. And I think you handled it brilliantly.
Well, John in Central PA just dropped me a note a little bit ago saying, I fear for Jack Smith's well-being. I hope the DOJ can provide him with adequate protection.
Yeah, me too.
That is not overreaction. That's not paranoia. Paranoia is the irrational fear that people are out to get you. I think this is entirely rational. And as to Clay Higgins, John added, Higgins also assaulted a young activist on camera. The activist called on the DOJ to charge him, but they think Republicans are above the law. So, you know, what else?
Yeah, well, so do Republicans. actually, that takes me back to that business which I messaged you about, the attack down in, it was Pasadena, California, earlier this week at a school board meeting, which was LGBTQ plus supportive. And a bunch of just bozos showed up to protest, all in mass-produced identical T-shirts saying, "Leave our kids alone."
All right, was that Pasadena, or was that last Friday in North Hollywood?
No, forgive me, Glendale.
Well, North Hollywood, and then Glendale, yeah.
Yeah, the one last week was like Satakoi, which, yeah, is North Hollywood.
And they basically, both of those events were ginned up by members of the Armenian community.
That's what the claim is.
Well, I mean, the guy who got the ball rolling in North Hollywood is proudly Armenian.
Well, he may be proudly Armenian. How many of the people following him or who came in?
Well, a bunch of the initial people who were involved in braying and bleeding about it were from the Armenian and the Hispanic communities, because as Tracy, who knows every last nook and cranny of L.A., told me, Glendale, for instance, is a heavily Armenian community. But yeah, you had people coming in from other areas, but they got the ball rolling.
Oh boy!
Yeah, because among other things, Tracy pointed out, yeah, and what if you denied the Armenian genocide? How would they like that?
Not so much. I've known enough of the Armenians in California to know that that's a great big flaming sore point with them.
Yeah, that's a line that must not be crossed, and nor would I. But the LGBTQ community is certainly not deserving of the same respect. Oh, and by the way, back to air quality. Ralph's just told me that where she is in New Jersey, the AQI was over 200 there a couple of days ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because we had it that or above in 2020 when we were getting hit with it. And it, the weird thing is, when it finally cleared, we had rain squalls blow through. And then at literally the same hour that the news came through about Ruth Bader Ginsburg passing away, the skies opened up and the sun broke through.
Wow.
It was as if there were this kind of benediction on us, like, hey, you got my message. You know what I would want you to do. Don't lose sight of it. It's a speaking.
Robin, I think Rick's finally meandered on in here. So any questions you got?
Billable? Hey. Billable?
How's everybody doing?
Good, good.
How
are
you,
friend?
I'm doing okay.
Is Ringo Starr still alive?
Don't ask me, please. I'm sure he is. He looks very well. You know what? He eats a lot of blueberries and broccoli, so there you go. And he's a vegetarian. So we should all take a cue from that.
Probably picked that up from Paul.
Exactly. Paul does the same thing. You got it. Yeah. Yeah. No, he sounded great.
So,
he's a great guy.
I bet his band was really tight too.
They were tight. Edgar Winter played his Frankenstein song. Like it was a 12-minute version. It was crazy. It was great. Beautiful. Yeah.
Crash Test Dummies is coming to Atlanta.
Yeah. Oh, how freaking cool!
Yeah.
You know,
tickets are reasonable. Only $35 a seat. I guess nobody's heard of them anymore.
Test Dummies?
Yes.
Yeah, back in the day, their lead singer was one of the only people that I could sing in key
bass.
With. What's his name?
There you go.
His name's Brad something.
Once there was this kid who got into an accident and couldn't go to school.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, but they were great in the
90s. No singing, Robin.
No singing. We have got a $1,380 fundraising hole.
Oh, shit. It's like deja vu all over again. What the fuck?
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Rick, I'm going to kick it out and ask you, what do you think the timeline's going to be for this indictment to actually come into fruition and Jerry gets picked and all that? I predicted 8 to 18 months. Does that sound about right?
No. I think they're going to have to speed it up because of the immunity of a president. They're going to have to. The judge, although you have this crazy judge, this Cannon judge.
Right.
She might set it out for like sometime in 2025 or something like that, but that's after the election and after Trump is possibly president. So I think what would happen is if she sets it out like after the election, I think the government would have to appeal it and just argue, look, you know.
Would Jack Smith have any recourse if she did something knuckleheaded like that?
Well, he would have to file what's called an interlocutory appeal, an appeal of a non-final order, or an appeal of an order that's not a final disposition of the case. And so to do that, you have to show, like, you know, irreparable harm and so forth, which I think he could show. But then you've got the 11th Circuit, which is kind of a conservative circuit.
But they've already slapped Aileen Cannon down a rat hole once.
They have. But this Aileen Cannon is a problem.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, I guess she could try to rat fuck the government by scheduling the trial like after the 2024 election. You know.
Smith has already said they will be asking for a speedy trial.
Yes. Yes, and if Trump asks for more time, he'll oppose that. And the judge will probably grant maybe, you know, an extension of the Speedy Trial Act, I would think, from Trump, at least one or two maybe. But, it remains to be seen what's going to happen. You know, the rest of the indictments better get filed pretty damn soon, you know, like the one in Georgia and then the January 6th indictment that would probably come out of D.C., I would guess, you know.
Well, Rick, do you think this is by design, or do you think this was? Do you think this is by design, or do you think it's coincidence?
Well, I think this
it's tool judge, you know, that's going to delay things. It's in his corner.
Well, see, the thing is, I heard you guys talking earlier that this was random selection. I don't think it was. I think she was assigned to the case because of what's called low case numbering for related cases. There was a related case involving the search warrant.
Yep.
A notice of related cases. Notice of related cases is what gets filed. And so they assign it to the judge who originally had it, no matter how odious they are or how bad they are, because it's just a matter of that's the way courts operate in terms of case assignments. You know,
Jack Smith being a three-dimensional chess player, you would have thought he'd have thought of that beforehand, before he filed it in Miami, you know?
But he didn't, well, he the didn't thing have is, a choice.
He didn't have a choice. The crimes occurred in Florida, Steve. You basically you indict the defendant wherever the crimes occurred, roughly, more or less.
And I heard Washington is just stacked up with January 6th cases, so that maybe was an option for him.
Well, I don't know if that was not an option, but I think because everything, the concealment and the conspiracy and so forth, transportation of documents occurred largely in Florida, that was the logical place for it to be. And Trump can't argue for a change of venue. He has no basis to do so. Whereas if, let's say, they'd filed it in New Jersey on the grounds that that's where some of these classified documents were transported to from Florida, that would have been a more tenuous kind of venue to have it in. And that could have slowed the case down. So he had no choice but to bring it in Florida. I just hope they get the other cases filed and get more normal judges for those cases. And
Jack Smith is the prosecutor for the January 6th stuff, too, relative to Trump.
Yes, he is.
Yes.
He's got a grand jury in D.C. working on that one. So we'll see what happens there.
So in all your infinite wisdom, Rick, would you hang your hat more on other cases than you would this one, especially with this judge being appointed that we know is infamous for slowing things down?
Well, as Robin said, she may not have a whole lot of leeway because, she got slapped down by the 11th Circuit. On the other hand, if she's a true maggot, she won't really care. She'll go ahead and do something crazy, set the case, let's say, for trial in, let's say, January of 2025 or something like that, and force the government to appeal and the 11th Circuit to slap down the judge, assuming they do, you know.
Bill will tell me if I'm wrong, but the government also has the right to move for her recusal.
Yes, if they can show that she has a bias against the government, yes. I'll tell you why they don't do that very much. These are lifetime appointed judges. If you move for a judge's recusal in a case, then, you know, you're forever going to be remembered by that judge as having moved for her recusal. Now, with a case of this magnitude, however, that would be maybe the exception to the rule where you might move for a recusal. But you've got to show some extrajudicial bias that is a bias against a party for matters unrelated to anything that has occurred in court.
And but the 11th Circuit can do it sua sponte.
As far as recusing her?
Yeah, they can remove her from the case sua sponte.
They can, but they're probably not that willing to do that very often, unless she does something really crazy. But, you know, generally, you know, that means on its own motion for those non-legal people, sua sponte.
Right. Well, speaking of being a non-legal people, what does that mean, sua sponte? Is that Latin for what? What does that mean?
On its own motion. Robin?
Thank you.
Is that right, Robin?
Yeah, basically.
I mean, sponte is, you know, on its own accord, or I don't know what sponte means.
Yeah, basically self, yeah, sua self. Self-actualize or self-actuating. In other words, sua sponte means that the court can do it without being asked to do it. They can look at it and say, this is going to be a mess. She's got to go.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't expect the 11th Circuit to do that, though. I would expect the government to file some kind of an emergency appeal or, you know, something like that, an emergency interlocutory appeal to change the trial schedule in light of the fact that, you know, Trump is a candidate for president. And it's against the public interest to have a candidate for president, you know, be subject to possible conviction, you know, before the, you know, after the, you know, after the voters have have weighed in, you know. I mean, the voters have a right to know whether or not they are going to be voting for a crook, so to speak.
That harkens back to the Nixon days. That does.
Yeah, exactly. But, exactly.
Would you sleep better knowing that Fannie Willis perpetuated her case and got out in front of this because it's a state case and he couldn't pardon himself? Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, I mean that would be interesting. You have the two cases the New York state case and you have the Georgia state case, and it'd be very interesting as far as what would happen. Let's say if Trump gets elected and yet has to face trial in those cases, or let's say he's convicted in the New York case and yet he somehow wins the presidency, and or he gets convicted in the Georgia case before the election, yet somehow wins the presidency. You know, whether the state's judgment would be honored by the Supreme Court, that would be a fascinating case. I hope we never get to that point. For obvious reasons.
That's why you're a lawyer reasons. And I'm not. You're
well, we think of, you know,
ahead of me, yeah.
Actually, there's a lot of similarities between your thinking and our thinking, Steve, because we like insurance people, look at the worst case scenarios.
Absolutely.
So, yes. You know, so that's a worst case scenario.
Everything is actuarial and we set our reserves accordingly. Yeah, I hear mm-hmm. what you're saying, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I mean, from what I can tell, I was quite impressed. I can't say I've read the indictment. I can't even get the internet here at the office. I can't even get a copy of the indictment because the way the the Great Wall of Wilson is set up here. As far as blocking sites and stuff, I call it the Great Wall of Wilson. My only knowledge is listening to Randy Rhodes. She read key parts of the indictment. And it sounds like they really set out a pretty damn compelling story. And it's very good that he got the indictment unsealed before the weekend today, so that Trump doesn't have 48, 72 hours lead time to kind of try and poison the well like they did with like Barr to Justice did with the, the Mueller supposed summary of the report or whatever, that kind of thing. So, the fact that they got the indictment out and it's a speaking indictment is, I think, is very helpful to the government. And then, that way Jack can't be accused of prejudicing the defendant's rights by publicizing the case, by having by grandstanding in a press conference, which he really didn't. And he just refers to the indictment, basically. Well, as I said in the indictment, Trump did this and that. What I find fascinating is that it's a 38 count indictment, not the 7 count indictment that we were led to believe it was like just last night, which tells me how inaccurate the mainstream media is in their reporting. They missed like 31 counts.
Well, wait a minute. Wasn't the media reporting on the Donald Trump post on Truth Social?
It was Trump yeah, they did.
Came up with the 7 count number.
Oh, was it Trump who did? Oh, okay.
Trump was the one that announced the 7.
Okay.
At least
okay.
That's what I was getting last night on MSNBC.
Right. Well, and they don't. See, he did that, whether he knew it was 38 counts or not. He did that because he knew it would inflame the maggots, but he also didn't want them thinking, 38 counts? 38 counts?
Yeah. Yeah.
And just so we know, this is... this is important. The minute the news went out, there's a website called The Donald. It used to be a subreddit until it got really nasty and they took it, they took it off of Reddit. And so over at The Donald, where, by the way, a whole bunch of January 6th was planned, one user said, "We need to start killing these traitorous fuck stains." And another one said, "It's not going to stop until bodies start stacking up. We're not civilly represented anymore, and they'll come for us next. Some of us they already have." Trans girl laugh out loud. Ha! and there was more of that shit. Among other things, one post at the Donald said, "A little bit about Merrick Garland, his wife, his daughters." And then under that post, someone else said, "His children are fair game as far as I'm concerned." Take a moment. His children are fair. Merrick Garland's children are fair game as far as that person is concerned. And another maggot said, "Jack Smith should be arrested the minute he steps foot in the red state of Florida."
The red state of Florida.
And then there's this. "Perhaps it's time for that civil war that the damn Demo KKK rats have been trying to start for years now." And then referring to Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. "Fact," all caps, of course. "Our forefathers would have hung these two for treason." On Nitwit Nero's rickety, falling apart social media platform, somebody wrote, "The entire Republican Party should flood the courthouse and demand real justice here." Charlie Kirk said, all Trump supporters, the man with the largest head in the world, by the way, Charlie Kirk said that every Trump supporter should descend on Miami Tuesday to protest. Then there was Mike Cernovich, who pushed Pizzagate, which wound up getting a pizza parlor with no basement shot up for having a child sex trafficking ring in the basement. Remember Comet Ping Pong Pizza in D.C.?
This is the JFK assassination all over again. The deep state killed JFK, and now they're using the Justice Department to take down Trump.
And even because, well, because even Caitlyn Jenner got into the act saying, "This is a dark day for America." You know, shut the fuck up, Caitlyn. You're out of your depth here.
Well, does anybody think that Jack Smith doesn't believe I'm of the opinion that Jack Smith has a case, that if he presented it and the media reports what goes on in the courtroom, even a MAGA jury would have to find him guilty. I think the case is that strong.
Well, that's a good point, Roger, but there's always jury nullification, and I know Billable knows what that is.
Oh, I know what it is, too.
These people have... I mean, I played the clip earlier of Mark Levin losing his shit. That life support system for a haircut, Sean the Hannity job, said, "The justice system's been whipping us beyond belief. Our country is in serious trouble." And the little Nazi Stephen Miller went on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and said, "The whole of the Republican Party, the whole of the conservative movement, the whole of the country that cares about the rule of law coalesces around President Trump." And even Alina Habana, counsel for the parking garage, showed up on Fox and said, "I'm embarrassed to be a lawyer at this moment. Honestly, I'm ashamed to be a lawyer." Well, honey, considering what you've done, you should be.
Wasn't she identified as lawyer number two in that?
I think she is.
Yeah, yeah. She's the one who signed the false certification.
Yeah.
That everything was had been produced.
I think you're right, and I need to do a little bit of email stuff here. Matt in San Francisco said, "Indictment. I read the entire thing. It has pictures, texts. It's actually not a bad read. 45 is fucked. It should be an interesting year."
Mm.
STS, y'all, stoke the stroke.
Yep. Yep.
And I read it too, and it is. I mean, there's 8x10 glossy photographs with circles and arrows and a paragraph on the back of each one. And Jude just wrote and said, "A gift arrived in my mailbox. A small check was enclosed, so Women Standing is sharing a portion with you. Hello to all, especially the voices on air that I've personally met." Ah, thank you, Jude. So that gets us down to 1360. And then, let's see, and Ralph's followed through on her challenge, so we are at 1360. To end, well, let's see, we're $160 from ending last week, and, Kevin just, and Kevin in Massachusetts jumped in, so 1335, getting closer to being done, last Friday. Jude said, "Great interchange now. I sense energy moving, a cleansing, to say, and it's so needed." I know. This is, you know, we have our fun and we make our jokes, but things like people calling on the children of the Attorney General to be slaughtered. These fuckers aren't playing, and what I said all along is true. Y'all, they're gonna do it again. Y'all, they're doing it again.
Well, just maybe they'll have the same amount of people showing up as when Trump tried to call them out to go to New York for the New York indictment. And even the people from Staten Island that voted heavily for Trump, there wasn't anything there. And I don't expect to see anything in Miami on Tuesday.
Oh, I don't know about that. I think there are going to be a lot more people there than in New York because, for whatever reason, Trump seems much more popular in Florida than New York. You know, that's why he moved to Florida to escape New York, you know?
Well,
kind of like Kurt Russell in that movie, you know? Escape from New York.
I don't think Nitwit Nero is quite up to snuff as Snake as far as that one's concerned.
Well, that's true.
Let's check in with Scary Jerry, though. I mean, Scary Jerry's on the ground in South Florida, so.
Wow.
Jerry, do you think the maggots will show up?
It's too hot to protest, man. I was just thinking maybe I should go down there. But I'm like, you know, it's hot. Seriously, it's like 90 degrees on Monday. Nobody's doing that shit.
Okay.
Nobody. And Florida's on its, like, Florida totally changes its mindset June, July, August. It's only, like, the true believers that are here. Anybody with funds bounce the hell out. So nobody has time for that shit. People have car payments for this. And mystery payments to make.
Well, is he so loved in South Florida that there won't be any counter protesters if they do show up?
No, nobody. At this point, nobody cares. Floridians and Miamians in particular have a really short attention span. 38 indictments, the nuclear shit. Fuck that guy. Yeah, I'm trying. But here's the thing. Can you hear me?
Yeah, you're there.
I thought of a political cartoon, and it's hysterical. It is Michelle and Barack Obama sitting on the couch, all half stand up. The TV's in the background, and it says, the TV extremist, 38 indictments. And Michelle looks at Barack and goes, remember I said they would hang a black man over a single top secret file and you should bring that back that day? Don't even get in the car? Yes, dear. I'd love to pick your toe again. Ooh, I got a crick.
Yep.
That's my political part, too.
Well, I hope the maggots are more bluster than... more bluster than action. Maybe they've learned a little bit since January 6th, because, you know, he called them out for January 6th, and even though people who should be going up the river for 15 are going up for 6, that's still 6 years
and
behind bars.
$250 million. Think about that. This man, I think it's time to come to grips here. He is a comic book supervillain. He really is. He did this after he did it in an insurrection. I truly think Trump is demented, but being at the fact that he's a Gemini, both of his personalities have split. That's what I think what's going on here. He does a crime that he tells on himself. It's not just bluster. It's neurological. I really think so.
Well, look, it's not our side saying it. Tucker Carlson said he's neurodivergent. But the thing is, neurodivergent people manage to live ordinary lives every day without trying to overturn the government of the United States. If he's anything, it's probably a psychopath or a sociopath. Of course, I'm not qualified to diagnose, but we did play with the DSM-5 axes one day, and you can make a pretty compelling case by just looking at the axes and then say, and wonder, well, what fits here? What fits there? Oh, look, everything fits.
If he would have just taken a couple of documents, you know, just the good stuff. The man had a palette of documents. Those pictures, they didn't show those pictures before. He had a palette of documents. Wrap your mind around that for a second. And all you have to do is extract his lies, 1,800 documents. You go, damn, Trump, you had 1,800 documents?
Some of the documents, and for those who have not read the indictment, some of the documents were squirreled away in a shower.
It doesn't make any sense. It's like some hoarder shit. I mean, I hope he sold them. That makes sense. At least my world makes sense at that point. And I think he definitely did. And I think he had shorts on Ukraine. I think he made a lot of money on the Ukraine war. With the gas. and other things.
Hey, Scary. Let me mention this, if I may. It's Rick here. I mean, who the hell keeps documents in a bathroom except for a tweaker, you know? You know what I'm saying?
Why didn't he get a storage facility?
Well,
they would have never found them.
They did, but these were the ones that he really, really felt close to.
Yeah, there you go, right.
So why didn't he steal them electronically, like 21st Century Spies did?
Because it was the physical document that mattered. He had a sit down with
not
a guy. Hold on. He had a sit down with an author who was writing a book about his presidency and hauled out one of the classified documents and said, "See, look what I've got." And he couldn't call up an electronically stored document if his miserable orange life depended upon it.
None of this makes any sense. I mean, and I hate the guy. Okay, I strongly dislike the guy, but none of this makes any sense.
Well, it makes an abundance of sense. It's what a wannabe dictator does.
Yeah, but your coup didn't work. That's the part. Your coup didn't work. They were going to find the document.
Yeah, but the thing is, there's evidence. There's probably evidence relating to the coup in the documents, and that's why they had to come with him.
It's pathological. It really is.
Yes, it's sociopath, psychopath behavior. Oh, by the way, a quick correction. Thank you to Ralphs in the serving as the Horn ad hoc second lawyer research department. Christina Bob was the lawyer who signed the form for the boxes.
Oh, okay.
Not counsel for the parking garage.
Okay. Similar last names.
One of them seemed, Alina Haba, I guess, seemed terrified when they said he turned state evidence. I've never seen so much terror on Trump. It was real.
Everybody should be, because he... You know, he complains about people rolling over on him. He rolls on everybody. And that's why my pink little ears perked up and I got a wry little smile of glee across my face when I saw that some of the counts were conspiracy counts. Because that means there's going to be some rolling going on. And Billable, you know this. You never offer the big fish a deal in exchange for him rolling on the little fish.
No, you don't. It's the other way around. Yeah, and the attorneys. I mean, Evan Corcoran, the attorney number one, documented everything pretty well. So, because Trump tried to get him involved in the crime, in part of the conspiracy to cover up the fact that he had these documents, and he refused to do it, and. You know, his attorney notes, I think, are accepted from the attorney-client privilege based on the crime fraud exception, because Trump, you know, asked him to commit a crime, you know? So it's fascinating. It's fascinating how everything works.
I absolutely love the fact that because, well, you know, revenge is a dish that is best served cold.
Yes.
Michael Cohen just tweeted, "Mazel." Not even Mazel Tov, just Mazel.
That's good.
Who tweeted that?
Michael Cohen.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh, man. I don't think Michael Cohen's wearing pants or sober right now. I think those two things have left the building.
And the thing is, I said at the beginning of the program that he is, and disagree with me if you do disagree, Billable.
Yeah.
Nitwit Nero is a criminal defense counsel's worst damned nightmare.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, the interesting thing is I heard his main counsel on CNN last night after the charges were announced, or at least after it was announced on Truth Social. And, you know, basically he quits like the very next day once the indictment's actually released. Because he probably reads it and realizes, oh, geez, I, I can't. I don't have a defense for this guy. I don't want to lose. So fuck it. I'm out of here.
Right.
Probably what happened.
And see what happens, Billable, when your client, whom you have told repeatedly to shut the fuck up, won't.
Uh-huh.
Because after the indictment was released, he went back to his rickety rattle wheels falling off social media platform and said,
"This is the man who caused the Lois Lerner catastrophe with the IRS. He went after evangelicals and great Americans of faith. The United States had to apologize and pay major damages for what this deranged lunatic did. He had a unanimous loss in the Supreme Court. His wife is a Trump hater, just as he is a Trump hater, a deranged psycho that shouldn't be involved in any case having to do with justice other than to look at Biden as a criminal, which he is."
Now, referring to the prosecutor in your case as a psycho, even if Jack Smith is a public figure,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's actual malice right there, Billable.
Yeah, well, that's,
Jack Smith will never pursue that.
No, no.
But it is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. I totally forgot. Lois Lerner, I hadn't heard that name in about 10 years. Like, what the hell? Who the fuck still remembers that?
Right.
People are going to be scratching their head saying, "Lois Lerner, what the hell is that?" I guess only the evangelicals might remember that because she was the one who was trying to target I think it was the evangelicals who were trying to violate the Johnson Amendment and spread politics in the pulpit, if I recall. And they're going to deny tax-exempt status to those churches that were doing that. But, you know, that whole thing got, you know, blown out of proportion, and IRS had to back off on that idea, I believe. But the idea was a sound idea. I thought so anyway, you know.
Well, here's a couple of things that are interesting little nuggets.
Okay.
From our buddy Baltimore Bob, subject line, buzzards, vultures, and maggots. Occam's razor tells us why most of Trump's opponents won't attack Trump. They're buzzards. They're vultures. They sense an enemy more powerful than them is slowly dying from 71 counts of criminal indictments, with many more to come. So they circle mm-hmm. the sky as they wait for the wounded beast to die. They then mm-hmm. plan to swoop down and feast upon his maggot supporters.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, you know, they fall on their knees and pray to God, and then fall on his followers and prey on them. And here's,
I like the metaphor.
And I do, too. That was good stuff, Baltimore Bob.
Yeah.
And then from John in Central
Peak. Cowbell.
I got to find it. So cowbell, okay. Cowbell.
Ding, 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 ding. Okay.
Yeah, we say cowbell now, just like Roy okay. Kent said whistle in Ted Lasso. Whistle.
Right.
Yeah, cowbell.
Right. Okay.
So this is a nice little nugget, too. John in Central PA said, "Remember when Kid Rock went on Tucker Carlson's show and bragged that Trump was showing him, quote, maps and shit, unquote, about North Korea?" Ooh, John. Nice. Nice skate save there.
Maybe he was a grand jury witness, Kid Rock.
I never saw any reporting that Kid Rock was, and would yeah. I love the fact that that maggots who won't use a trans woman's legally changed name will somehow manage to figure out a way to refer to a grown man whose name isn't Kid Rock as Kid Rock.
Yeah, well, you know, hey, it's just cool to be called Kid if you're like a grown-ass man, Robin. Didn't you know that?
Yeah, because we've already had one Alice's Restaurant reference this evening. Here's the second one. Kid! Kid! Jesus.
That's right. Let's hope justice is not blind this time around, though.
Your Honor, I didn't steal $10,000. It was $15,000. Okay, okay.
Hey, get it right, you psycho.
Well, y'all, it has been a fantastic conversation this evening. I have enjoyed it immensely, and it's time for me to clear out of here. If you want, the Friday on the front porch, Friday on the back porch conversation will continue after the program. That's entirely dependent upon the will of hosts and moderators hereof. That's Roger and Steve. Hey, Steve, thank you so much. Thank you so much for stepping into the breach. I really appreciate your brother.
No problem, my friend. What a great show tonight. I knew it could be. And
yeah, I had a feeling.
Yeah. I mean, the fundraising was a bit weak, but maybe we can pick that up later.
Well, you know, I mean, what, 13? What did I say? 1335 or something? So we'll just keep plugging away and hope we don't end June in a hole.
Yep. But, yeah, it was a great show. One of my favorite porches you've ever had, and I'm not just saying that because
No. I mean, as Billable reminded me, probably among the greatest front porches of all was the front porch that involved Rick. It's not about the cat.
Not about the cat.
That involved you as well, Steve. Yeah. That also involved you.
Oh yeah, that
did, you played the straight man. You played the straight man in that whole thing.
And then there was the colonoscopy Friday on the front porch, Steve, with your piece of bubble gum from eighth grade. And these things live on in my mind. I mean, it's
an infamy. Hall of Fame moments, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. But tonight, Rack's up there. Rick, you played a huge part of it. Thanks for bringing your pearls into this, man.
Yeah, thanks for coming and playing, Bill.
Hey, once I finally talked to Ginger, I was able to come on board. So there you go.
There you go.
So, yeah.
Well, thanks, everybody. I appreciate you. And thank you, Scary Jerry, down in South Florida. Appreciate you as well and your perspective. You're on the ground there. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers and our a la carte contributors. Thanks y'all for jumping in this evening. Thanks to Ralphs for the initial challenge. Thank you so much. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all volunteer staff. Thank you to Roger and thank you to Steve this evening, both in the chat room and in the and in the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves. Thank you. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. Hey, y'all, remember, please, like and subscribe and follow the podcast wherever you take it. Share it on social media with your friends. Send it out there far and wide and let them know that there's an entirely different kind of way to go about talk, and we call it conversation radio here. Because it's beautiful when we add new voices to the conversation. Please leave a comment as well on the podcast. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and in fact, a proud union shop. Thank you so much. Please stay safe. Get your booster if you're eligible. And, wear your mask when you're around the maggots. They've already, I don't know how much more they have to do to prove how dangerous they are, but they are. Y'all, they're doing it again. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, keep your hand sanitizer on hand, and remember that mask is a real help if you're breathing shitty air from massive forest fires brought on by climate change. Thanks, Joe Manchin, for the Mountain Valley Pipeline. God, that's going to be great. And if some burbling, shambling, adipose wad of petty jealousies and insecurities comes stumbling towards you down the sidewalk, babbling about Jack Smith is a psycho, well, avoid King Maggot like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. More and Monday comes sooner than we know, and we'll probably be stacking them like cordwood. Later.